Welcome to Radical Love, a foster parenting podcast. I am Corey Hazabeard with Megan Hazabeard.
Woo woo!
How are you doing this week?
I'm doing excellent, Corey. Thank you for asking.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You have been doing great. We had our first ever famiversary.
It's true.
We have had kids now for how long?
1 year in the can.
1 year in a can. Can't buy that in stores.
It was an interesting year.
It was an interesting year. So you were kind of the mastermind behind the day of famiversary. What mm-hmm. It was on Easter, actually,
yeah,
this year.
Yeah, it fell on Easter. So made it a big to-do. Lots of stuff happening that day.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, we treated it kind of like an anniversary. We went with the one-year paper plan. So the kids got some notebooks and letters or, you know, envelopes and stamps.
Pencils.
Yeah. I was like, other cool things that have now slipped my brain.
Games. I got some card games.
Well, I think you're thinking of Easter.
It was the same day.
It was a big day for him. Trying to explain why you would get someone like paper gifts was a whole interesting process. And if you think about it, it is really strange.
Yeah. So if you're not familiar with this, in a lot of marriages, they celebrate.
Yeah. It's not a religious thing. It's just the constitution of marriage. There's no marital constitution.
I don't know, but it's just this tradition that exists. So like,
yeah, well, probably Hallmark related.
Yeah. I don't know. They all, one of the invented holidays, but for the first year anniversary is paper, you know, eventually you get to diamond and gold when you're like 50 and 75 years of anniversaries.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. No, I think the next one's cotton. So we don't have to worry about diamond and gold.
Amen. It'll be brass and iron. So yeah. So we did that. And we also went and saw a movie. Oh, so in the morning we had Easter baskets and all that fun stuff. And we went to church and we did that. And then after church we had family come over and eat lunch with us.
Mm-hmm.
And then we played some basketball together, and then we went and saw a movie, mm-hmm. essentially. And anything else that night?
No, I think that was it. Yeah. It was a big day.
It was a big day. We may
you
have
summed up 24 hours of intensity into 24 seconds.
And we literally, because it was Easter, we had lots of leftovers, so we just had leftovers for dinner, too. So it was a fun, full day of just doing things. And we got to see a movie that I have been waiting at least 3 years for, Batman, Superman, : Dawn of Justice. Dun, dun, dun. I have been waiting for this.
I was
going to
say, arguably,
long.
Your whole life.
It's my whole life.
This question that's just plagued you.
Batman is my favorite.
Without spoilers, do you have an answer?
Oh, yeah. I saw the movie, and the answer is obvious. So, I love Batman. Batman is my favorite superhero by far, has always been my favorite superhero. And so we got to take the kids to see that, and they loved it, and they enjoyed it. It is a sequel to another movie called Man of Steel, which is a Superman movie. And so it was great. When Megan and I first started dating, the show Smallville was on TV, and we would regularly watch Smallville together.
Well, we were latecomers to it, the Smallville empire. Like, we didn't start. Like, we're never on trend with stuff. Like, we didn't watch Lost. Like, you did the first year, but we rarely watch stuff when it comes out. We're more Netflix bingers.
Netflix bingers. Bad thing about Smallville, not on Netflix.
It is.
I haven't seen it.
It spent a time on there, but.
But this is pre-Netflix, or at
this
least
was pre-Netflix, or like in the early days when everybody just got the DVDs delivered. Yeah.
So we got the three discs at a time through Netflix when we first started.
Is that what we did? I thought. Well, we caught it on TV like one time. We're like, oh, this is great. And it's Superman. And I love Superman. And you love Batman. So.
And you love Lex Luthor, a.k.a. Michael Rosenbaum.
We don't have to get into all that. Wow, we just took it to
a whole
pre-marriage crushes, but okay.
Yeah, and so we would watch that pretty regularly together. And then, so Man of Steel, you had some visceral reactions to Man of Steel. So how did you feel? You are a Superman fan. Mm-hmm. How did you feel about Man of Steel?
I loved it. We watched it again recently in preparation for the great court case of Batman v Superman.
: Dawn of Justice.
Okay. This is better than you shortening it to BVS.
Yeah, Megan has been confused.
Anti that.
Because every time I talk about it, I just call it BVS, and she gets a little confused every time.
Yeah.
And I say it really quick.
Vacation Bible School.
Not VBS.
Vacation Bible School.
Oh, bacon. Bacon vegetation summary. I don't know. BVS. It sounds good to me. So we went and saw that. It is a dark movie. There are some scary scenes and things like that in it. But in the end, it was a great movie to take our kids to, I think. Now, our kids are older. They're 10 and 13. And they're pretty mature on what they enjoy and what they watch.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it's fascinating to watch it now as a foster parent. So before watching it, I love just superheroes and people saving the day and like overcoming crazy things in their lives. But it was very powerful for both of our kids to watch this movie, because Batman lost his parents and is raised by a butler named Alfred, which is kind of commonplace. And so
I always thought we were the Kents.
Well, we're getting there. So it was very interesting for our kids, because Batman was raised by a surrogate parent. He, you know, Alfred, the butler, not family. And then he also, the story is that Batman adopts or is a foster parent for Robin as well. So, which isn't in this movie, but Robin is a foster kid.
I never realized he adopted him. That was always a weird relationship in my head. This younger man that hung out with Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
I never really got that.
Yeah. So he was a foster kid. His parents also died and Bruce adopted him. And just kind of, you know, oversaw his life. And
wait, are you saying that like that's from the comics? Bruce adopted him? Because in all the stuff I've seen, predominantly the Adam West Batman show, mm-hmm. I don't remember any adoption issues on the table.
Well, I will also remind you of Batman and Robin with Chris O'Donnell.
Oh, I've seen it recently,
yeah. And he is an adopted kid, essentially.
You're just saying in general.
Yeah, I think history says that.
But you're not going on combo. People can write us and tell us.
Mm-hmm.
Explain it to me how this works.
Where
but
I'm
there
wrong.
Was there was no court dates with Bruce Wayne.
Right.
He was always at benefits. He was never at court dates.
Right, yeah. So yes, Batman takes care of somebody else whose parents died and, you know, kind of the role of a foster parent. But then also you have this other kid, Clark.
Alien, technically.
Alien. What was his real name? Kal-El.
Mm-hmm.
So Kal-El, a.k.a. Clark Kent, is sent from another planet to Earth, crash lands, and is discovered by John and Martha Kent. And they take him on as their own child and raise them to become the man that he became, which is Superman. And it was,
again, not a whole lot of paperwork.
Not a lot of paperwork. I wonder if they had to do like the safety check around their house. Kryptonite?
Well, they would have to somehow like forge documents, you know.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Basically, John and Martha Kent are criminals, really.
Yeah, they're harboring fugitives. So for our kids, when they see this movie, it really speaks to who they are to some deep and profound way, I think. And the conversations that we've had with them before and after the movie it's always very fascinating on how they identify with characters in movies, especially superheroes and people like Batman and Superman. And so I thought it was just a great movie to talk to kids about. And then I don't want to give any gigantic spoilers, but one of the driving factors in the movie is, where is God when your dad beat you? Is one of the motivating factors for the villain in the movie. And he's very mad that God was not there to save him when he was being hurt, and wants to give power to all these people that are asking questions about, where was God when I was being hurt or abandoned or not? Why didn't God show up to save me? And so it's just these great, deep questions that is a vehicle for kids to talk about things, where God was when they were in the middle of neglect or abuse. And so it's just one of those, it's panned by almost every reviewer known to man. I loved it. I am a Superman, Batman fan, but for me, more than anything, my kids loved it just for the conversations that we've had around it mm-hmm. because of it. So if your kids are, there is some, there's not some, there's lots of violence in it, and it's got some scary scenes in it. But if your kids are into that and you want to have a movie that talks about those things, start with Man of Steel, because it kind of talks about Clark Kent and Superman pretty directly and what it was like to raise a kid and adopt a kid that was different and didn't have a place, especially if you have like a transracial family or a family that has LGBTQ plus members in the family. This would be a good movie on how to discuss inclusion of differences and different races and different sexualities, which is very adamantly pushed in, especially Man of Steel, raising a kid that's different in your family. And what decisions Martha and Jonathan Kent had to make to raise a kid that was different than them and culturally different than them and wanting to include them in that culture still. So that's how powerful that movie was to me.
This is the Getting Deep with Movies podcast. Yeah.
I love movies. I love comic book characters. I love all these things. So so if you have opinions about Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, and things like that that you want to send us, or other great movies that your kids love, I mean, movies like Paddington,
yeah,
was great. Even for our older kids, they loved it. And talking about adoption, there's a lot of movies that I had kind of forgotten that have a lot of adoption.
Yeah, and maybe it's the case you don't see it until you're in it, you know.
Mm-hmm. And just a lot of adoption, or not just adoption, but families that come together in,
well, like Disney's known for the broken, tragic family that somehow becomes whole again.
Yeah. So if you have movies that you thought were really important to your family that have provided great conversations, please send them to us. We'd love to see them. We'd love to talk about them. So you can always reach out to us at radicallovepodcast@gmail.com or at radicallovepod on Twitter. Once again, that is radicallovepodcast@gmail.com and at Radical Love Pod. So this week,
yeah,
we are talking about the great, the grand, the overwhelming and weird experience of what it means to go through PATH. What is PATH and what does it stand for, Megan?
PATH, Parents as Tender Healers. And that is DCS's version for the state of Tennessee. I imagine it's not called that in every state. It could be.
Who
something
knows?
Else.
Who knows?
So the basically the training that your state would put on for you to become a foster parent. And again, the training is not legally binding. You could take the training and decide, nope. Not for me. Okay. Don't do that. That's not a segment.
Not for me. This podcast is not for me. Not on purpose. So
I mean, gosh, even if you are just a parent of kids, there's a lot of things that would even be helpful in, mm-hmm. That could be found in the PATH classes. So yeah, that's what we're talking about when we talk about PATH classes.
So we have done it twice.
We have. Twice. That is not required. Shouldn't do it twice. Although it was good. I mean, I love to learn. So.
Oh, yeah. So we took it once before we had kids, and mm-hmm. then we had kids and we moved to a different agency. And so
it was a higher level agency, which we'll talk about levels later. But yeah, so they had more intense PATH classes, which were really good.
Really good. And so we transitioned to them, and to transition to them, part of the requirement was to retake PATH so they know that we are all on the same page. So we have taken PATH twice. I hope that
in a single year
we have taken PATH twice. So how long does PATH typically take?
It depends on your agency, because both our agencies did it different. They were doing it, what, two nights a week for 6 weeks?
6 weeks. And then another one was, the second one we moved to was every weekend.
All day on Saturday for 4 weeks.
For 4 weeks.
So.
Both were hard.
Intense.
They're hard, intense, and there's lots of homework.
There is homework. And it's your first experience meeting other people that are interested in, and we had good and bad experiences in that process. So, yeah, I would say my very first night of PATH, you were actually gone, which the first night, fortunately, was just an intro and kind of them telling us what to expect, because I did almost zero research for it. I just knew I could show up to this class and find out more information. So it was just me, and probably based on that experience alone, it was not great. So it's amazing that I was like, no, I think I want to do this.
Yeah. I would say that if you go to PATH and you don't get a good sense right away from the organization, if they're not organized, if their copies are bad, if the agenda that they hand out to you is incorrect, if the workbook that they give you is missing pages and out of order, that is a sign that they are disorganized.
Let me just be clear. We took our PATH classes through a third-party agency, so mm-hmm. you can go straight through DCS is one way to do it. I would say if you're not familiar with the foster care system at all, going through state straight through DCS is going to be a more difficult option because DCS is so overwhelmed. So what they do is there's other agencies that exist to help kind of relieve that, and whether they started as, you know, religious organizations or whatever, but they're charitable nonprofit agencies that are intended to kind of relieve the burden on DCS, which is extremely helpful and extremely knowledgeable. But I will say it is evident by what they're handing out to you, what that's going to be like. And of course, all of this, when you're working with it, is there's a level of disorganization and frustration that occurs.
Right. And that they, like the second agency that we went through PATH with, they were much more nimble on their feet. So if there was a mistake, they immediately fixed it. They handed out a disc that had everything on it.
Yeah. And their response time was really great. Yeah, so I mean, there is a clear difference in the two organizations I took.
Yeah, so when you're experiencing this, your first encounter with these people, they want to put on their best face for you in this PATH class, especially if it's a third party organization. When you sign up to be part of them, you are essentially an employee of that place, and so they want you to work for them and raise kids through them because that's kind of how they exist and make money. So if they are not giving you a good organizational tools or techniques, or they're not organized in the first place when they hand you stuff, try looking somewhere else.
Yeah, look at other organizations or contact people in your area that are knowledgeable. Because in our area, I think there's no less than 5 easily organizations that do foster care. Mm-hmm. And it turned out the first one was not a good fit for us. And the second one has been. And that's made a huge difference. And not to say that, you know, still these people have very hard jobs and are responsible mm-hmm. for a lot of kids. And I'm only responsible for my 2 kids. I'm very thankful for that, because it's enough.
Yeah, our DCS caseworker has about 25 kids. And both of our caseworkers that we've had at the 2 different organizations have had about 12 to 15 kids on their caseload. So they have lots of stuff going on. And so organization is very important. And so always keep that in mind. Always.
That is huge. But Corey and I's responsibility is to our 2 children and being the voice and the advocate for them and teaching them how to voice and advocate for themselves, you know, because that we won't always be their voice.
Absolutely. So PATH night 1, it's just an introduction. You get to mm-hmm. know everybody else in there, and essentially you're going on a journey together where you're gonna have to be vulnerable and honest. There's gonna be stuff about your family background, and you have to talk about that, and you have to kind of talk about how you think you would raise kids, how you would deal with things. You'll have to take some.
There is a lot of hypotheticals.
A lot of hypotheticals. You'll have to take some racial equality classes, how to parent classes, mm-hmm. how to discipline classes. You'll have to, take culture classes. Lots.
Working with the education system. I mean, there is a lot of good information to be found in there.
Yes.
For sure. I mean, nobody, I think, loves going to it. I always went with the hope that, if I got one good solid piece of information or contact, that would be beneficial to me or my mm-hmm. children. That was worth it. And always, I think I did. Mm-hmm.
And one of the last ones is working with the biological family mm-hmm. is one of the other
just huge,
huge parts of the class. So going through this, the first is always an introduction. And you talk with other families about things like what are kind of the things you're looking for in a family, what kind of kids you want to take into your home, why are you becoming a foster parent? I mean, one of the people that we were in a foster parent class was like, we want a 0 to 3 month old and he the baby has to be he it has to be has to look just has to have green eyes, it has to look just like the husband in this relationship.
It was like a Build-A-Baby.
Yes. It was like they went to a coffee shop and asked for a macchiato or something with extra whip, extra hot or something. I don't know. But it was very weird. So there you'll encounter things like that. But most of the people you encounter in those classes are great and have great intentions and are there for the same reasons you are.
Sure.
And so...
And I will say, I think part of, and this happened with both the classes we took, part of the agency's responsibility is just to scare you off if you're easily scared off. So they definitely give you the worst case scenario that they can come up with that they've experienced, just to make you aware, like, here's the worst thing. And I've actually had, you know, it's interesting what people come up and say to you is way worse, is way worse than... probably what they said probably, but because really it's the best thing we could do is helping with these kids. But they do really try and intentionally scare you off, because if you are going to be easily scared off, if you think this is going to be a piece of cake, if you're not doing this for the right reasons, then
yeah,
I don't think anyone wants you really around anyway. So
horror story after horror story is given. So yeah, it's
yeah, but they're and to say that they're worst case scenarios, Corey and I would sit in these classes and go, okay, so like, bring it on. We can do that. We can deal with that. Like, that's not beyond the scariest thing I've ever heard. So
yeah, so there are lots and lots of great things to learn in path class. What were some of the things that stuck out to you about what you learned in path class? You were very good about taking notes and getting a
lot of
stuff.
I'm a visual learner. I do better with taking notes. Some of the most important things I learned there, they talked a lot about like working with schools, which I thought was really helpful, and what to look for. And just there's so many, and even taking two different path classes, I don't even think they did a great job, not until we've been in it and needed it, of all the resources that really are available. You are so not alone in this process. There's so many great free things. Like, people want to see you succeed, you know. So something we've utilized is, and I know the state of Tennessee has it, I don't think every state has it, is the on-call emergency, which is just really good for a variety of situations. Like, each agency has, like, certainly has an on-call number that you can call if it's after hours or you need something. But yeah, mobile crisis. And what, and how helpful that can be, just in, you know, in the times we used it, it was just more like we were out of our depth as far as from what, a counseling perspective.
Yeah.
I don't want to get in too deep into the reasons, because just for confidentiality's sake of our kids, but, yeah, and like what it meant to have a third party come in,
evaluate the
situation. Yeah, off hours, and really just de-escalate, and they did a great job at that.
Absolutely.
So that, like, stuff like that, which, you know, you can tell me about that, but I don't even understand it until the need to use it and how great that was.
Yeah, for me, the things that stuck out the most overwhelming one is the school one, because there's so many organizations and tips and tricks that they give you to write down in that. So it, from my perspective, definitely take the best notes, maybe even record the school one, because that one is so, there's so much information. And then second, the one that kind of got me the most is kind of their cultural context, because it'll talk about kids coming from abused and neglected situations that are coming to your home, and the feelings and the things like that they may do. So they'll in this place that we took first, they'll talk about these kids that were raised to steal for the parent initially to help get food and or make money. And so every time they would take the kid to the grocery store, he would steal a bunch of stuff for the mom or the foster mom, you know, and things like that.
In order to contribute to the family, you know, that was his job.
Yeah. And just talking about helping you learn the language that the kid has learned of what it means to love somebody else, and using that in a positive way, and engaging with it instead of being frustrated or angry, allowing you to encounter it in a direct way that's positive and not destructive. Because if you react to that kid screaming at him that, you know, you stole he's going to shut down or not be responsive or not respect you or not think you or you care about him, when deep down that kid was just trying to love you and show you that he cares about mm-hmm. you. Or kids like food insecurity. A lot of, I would say almost all of the kids come from a place of food insecurity. So they, wherever they were hungry almost all the time. And so they will, you will need to have copious amounts of snacks and food on hand when they first move in. Because they have been taught that when food is around, you devour it because it doesn't exist for more than just a moment, or somebody else will eat all of it. So you need to it helped us understand that you always need to have food around until they understand that, hey, it's not going anywhere. It's always going to be here. And it was these very important cultural moments and things that they've been taught through because of the neglect that they've gone through that you can help and soothe.
I would say it took our kids 2 weeks to really understand that we always had food.
Oh, yeah.
If not longer.
And, I mean, they went through $100 of snacks in a week.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately,
that lasted about 2 weeks. But really understanding, and Corey, who's the primary cook in our household, did a great job of, usually he prepares in the kitchen and then either serves in the kitchen and we eat in the dining room. But he did a good job when it was clear that there was a real concern about the amount of food of, you know, it was kind of like Thanksgiving where he would put all the food out on the table. And so it was very clear. He made plenty of food. We always had mm-hmm. leftovers because there was no understanding from the kids of, like, there is food. Like, so it was like eat or, you know, eat and survive.
Yeah.
So you did a great job of presenting all the food and making it clear, like, there, don't worry, you will go to bed full.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, both of our kids put on 10 pounds in the first month or two that they lived with us.
Yeah.
They eventually lost that weight.
Yeah. But
it just, they had to understand that food was going to be there. I mean, and one of the brothers would not eat until he knew that his brother mm-hmm. was full, because he was trying to take care of his brother. I mean,
just, that's what he did as protection, was give his extra food to brother. Yeah. So,
I mean, so you've got like when it talks about being parents as tender healers, I mean, this is like what they're teaching you is how to encounter these things and how to embrace these things and soothe those pains and those problems that they're facing.
And I will say, like, the teachers we had when we first enrolled the kids, you know, when it was very evident there was food insecurity, did a great job. Just, you know, it was the last 9 weeks of school, and she did such an amazing job when I spoke with her about, like, listen, there's food insecurity. He's just not always sure he'll eat. And fortunately, where we are, we're so fortunate in the district that 100% of the lunches are free. So all the kids in our school district eat for free.
And breakfast.
Lunch and breakfast is free. So the first 9 weeks we were feeding them breakfast, only to discover they were also eating breakfast at school, mm-hmm. which is fine. That's part of the weight gain, I'm sure, to breakfast. But the teacher did a great job of allowing, and it wasn't just our child. I think there were other students that had needs. And so it would allow, you know, there was always leftover breakfast items. So she kept those instead of throwing them away. And so there was always fruits and things available that the students could have all day. And it was just the sort of support at home and at school that, you know, our youngest really understood, like, oh, I will have food, mm-hmm. you know, to go from a place of not knowing if he was going to eat to knowing that there was going to be food, and just lowering your anxiety, because none of us can understand what that feels like to be stressed out. I mean, I can understand what it feels like to feel like you're not going to have enough money at the end of the month or whatever, mm-hmm. but I've always known that there would be food. So, and really what you can do to lower anxiety creates a better quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
So that was important.
Yeah. One of the funny things that kind of was that we go through in PATH is you have to watch a movie as part of your cultural awareness and racial awareness class. One, I'm just going to say this like it is and how we felt in the moment. We were very angry about how racist some of the content was, because they had a list of ethnicities on the wall, and they had a list of negative connotations about each ethnicity, and they wanted us.
Well, it was a mix of positive and negative, I guess. I don't know. It was just a mix of stereotypes, I guess.
Yeah, and they wanted us to place the stereotypes on the wall of each ethnicity, and it was...
Well, I think their very first mistake you can pinpoint to the fact that the cultural sensitivity class was being taught by two middle-aged white women, and predominantly I think the children are African-American, so... I feel like right there, I think they had some oversight on what was the best.
And it didn't only, like, it's not only what we did, it was also the groundwork they set up for the comments that fueled the rest of the discussion was horrifying and horribly negative. And we had to have a long conversation with these people, our teachers, afterwards on how upset and frustrating that was. And it was negative to LGBTQ plus people. It was negative to... It was negative to every ethnicity except for white. It was also part of the gigantic issue. It was like, it was just baffling on how...
So many errors, yeah.
So many errors.
And while we live in Nashville, which is a metropolitan city, and you can kind of forget you're in the South how you live your life, the area, the district, the area covers for this particular agency is a 70-mile radius. So when you get out of Nashville for 30 miles, you're getting into some rural issues. I mean, there are very rural people that were partaking of these classes that maybe don't have cable news, or the only news they have is Fox. Can you say that?
Whoa. These people want to make America great again.
There were some things verbalized that were very upsetting to not only Corey and I, but some other parents, which is good. It was good that, you know, it was glaringly a problem to not just us. And I will say, to their credit, I will say when we brought up these concerns to the agency, they did at least pretend to listen to it. I mean, they did. I mean, they openly listened to our issues and our concerns with how they had handled things.
Absolutely. So that leads me. They made us watch a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Our initial assignment was supposed to be this movie called Gridiron Gang with Dwayne The Rock Johnson. But somehow we were given the wrong DVD and we got to watch Boys in the Hood.
Yep.
And now the other people. So it was us and another family initially, at this point in the class. And so they were supposed to get Boys in the Hood, and we were supposed to get Gridiron Gang. I am thankful that we got Boys in the Hood, and they got Gridiron Gang, because...
They weren't Mennonite, but they were very close to a very closed culture.
Let's just say religious. She always wore denim skirts.
Yeah. And, yeah.
Sorry to everybody that wears denim skirts.
Yeah, but... I mean, I've rocked a denim skirt.
But it was an interesting, like, there was something they wanted to homeschool the kids. They wanted to shelter the kids away from other cultures as much as possible.
FYI, you cannot homeschool state
custody kids,
custody children. That's called a cult.
Whoa.
I'm not saying homeschool is a cult. I'm just saying when you're trying to change the fundamentals of the child. Yeah.
Hot take from Megan Hazabeard over here.
Yeah.
So the family that took it or had Gridiron Gang, it's a PG-13 movie, and they were horrified.
Yeah, the language. And
they were angry. They were so angry about the language and what was talked about in that movie. Still haven't seen Gridiron Gang. It's on Netflix now. I'm tempted to watch it to see how bad it was. But we got the rated R, hardcore sex scene, Boys in the Hood, gang violent fuel movie. Great movie. Furious, great character. Absolutely one of my favorite characters I've seen in a movie in a while. Great father figure who goes through. But it was that this... We watched it, and yes, we watched it, and it was just a good movie. It's a good movie.
Like, yeah, it's a great movie.
It's well written.
Everybody should watch it, whether you have foster kids or not.
Yeah, it's a great movie. It's interesting. It's thought-provoking. But the way that our foster care organization was like, this is what it means to be black, and this is how all black families are. They have to deal with gang violence at all times, and that they're poor, trash that has to deal with gang violence at all times, and there's no way that they can pull themselves out of it, you know, kind of thing, and that they have no agency, and that they're just, gonna always be poor and be black. And it was, that was the frustrating part. That's how that they used that movie as an example of what it means to be black in America. And it was just, it was not a positive view.
No, yeah, they did not handle that properly.
And I will be honest, once again, we are a transracial family, that we are constantly talking about ethnicity issues and racial issues and openly discussing with those with our kids. We do not know what it's like to be black. We do not know what it's like to be raised by white parents when we're different than them. We don't know what that's like. But we know that we have to constantly confront that and be there with them and raise them in their culture as much as we possibly can and provide space for them to experiment with culture and where they, what their interests are and what their passions are and what they love. So it was just very weird that our, that this was like the way that they took that movie instead of, there are so many other ways that they could talk about that movie. But it's a good movie.
And Corey's a fixer and he kept trying to like fix the, the like lesson materials, and which I agree, like there are some changes that need to happen, but watching Corey try to like battle the teacher and like, okay, you're teaching this wrong was,
I'm not argumentative.
No, you weren't argumentative and you weren't point proving, but it was, you were definitely trying to change it on your end of the table. And I kept trying to explain the only way you're going to change it is being on the other end of the table. So until they let us teach this class.
Now we have a podcast. Yeah. See who's doing
Yeah. The Path Podcast.
Path class. No.
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 I don't have
Nobody
time.
Wants that.
It's boring. We're going to do it incorrectly anyways. But it's great. The Path is great. Is as good as what you bring to it and how honest and transparent and how much you let it affect you. So I would definitely say go in there open-hearted, willing to change, willing to take notes, willing to learn how to interact with children and encounter children and where they're at in their life. And so it's always fascinating. And
again, you can take the class and it's not, you have not signed any legal papers. You can find out more information. And it's a great way to get a sense of an agency.
Yeah, and a lot of agencies will let you meet other foster parents at some point. Mm-hmm. And once you meet those other foster parents and you don't feel like you connect with any of them, that's another sign. Go somewhere else. If the place that you're at and with, if you don't connect with the people that are in the same organization, these are the people you're going to go to classes with
for and trainings,
with for months and months and months and months of your life. So if you don't see yourself enjoying being around the people that are in this space, find another organization. A lot of those things can be transferable in a lot of cases if you haven't graduated already. So yeah, if you think you're not connecting right away, go to it and seek it out in another organization. Hey, take a couple different organizations at once and go to the one that you find better.
Yeah, figure out what works for you. Because we definitely had a better experience with the Second Path class and the other families, because there were transracial families, there was LGBTQ plus families, like there was all sorts. And it just was, felt like a better mix, and the reasons on why people were doing it felt like a better existence than what we had been used to. So that was good.
Much more pleasing to be in the other organization just because of the families alone, let alone the teachers.
Like
and
the teachers were better.
Yeah. So, yes. So always feel free that you can move. So it took us how long to go through PATH initially, the first one?
It was 6 weeks.
So 6 weeks. And then after PATH, you have to go through interviews and what
else?
Yeah,
they do interviews with you and you have to write like a bio about your life and your raising, and they really want to know how you were raised and how you see yourself raising kids.
It's extensive and probing into your life. It's not easy, and it's pretty deep, and you have to be pretty vulnerable to the situation.
Right.
Just know that going in. But I think once again, if you're going to be a foster parent, you're going to have to be pretty vulnerable with these kids.
Yeah, there is an element to I call it zoo life, like being in the zoo, because there's different agencies that come to your house that constantly, and I like to think I'm a clean freak, but I can let the dishes and the vacuuming pile up. So then like then agencies are constantly over. And I just gave up the idea. I knew from the beginning, I'm like, my house is never going to be spotless.
Yeah.
So I just had to like let that piece go, that like I live in this perfect house, because that's not how I live pre-kids.
Yeah.
It wasn't how I was going to live post-kids. So
yeah, we clean the whole house, but our bedroom's a mess.
Like, so it's just, and I just got used to it. And most of the time, like, they're very nice. And
yeah,
and all that. But there is an element of like, oh, I'm a monkey in a zoo and they're coming to look at me and observe. And
yeah, you'll have, I mean, 2 to 3 organizations through your house every week for a couple months, if not.
Yeah, initially it's a lot. And then it tapers. And now it's about twice a month, but because we have some in-home.
But so you go through PATH, you go through all the paperwork, you apply.
Go through the interview, they do the home check.
You go through the inspection, you do all the inspections, all the safety stuff.
You know, your medical stuff has to be up to date. You have to be in good health, apparently, to raise kids for some reason.
Your dogs have to have
nothing
will
kill you faster than raising kids, I suppose. Age your heart and your
waistline.
Yeah.
So
we've aged like Obama since we've had kids.
So you have to do med checks. You have to be certified in taking meds. You have to be first aid and CPR certified.
Oh yeah, those were good. I mean, that's always good to have, especially like, you know, CPR with kids. Why every parent should take that. Yeah. That should be a requirement.
It should be. We have to have it updated every year. I'm trying to think of anything else that happens after you take all the classes. They come and visit. And then they send somebody to your house every single month or every single week before you have kids, just checking in.
Check the fire alarms. Check the extinguishers.
They're constantly checking you because at any moment you could get a phone call and they're going to put kids
in your home. Really annoying once you've really completed everything and you're waiting and this like, man, this anticipation that builds up and getting the kids, and at any moment your life could be drastically changed. And
turned
it was
upside down
for us.
We were approved in November, at the end of November, and then we got kids in
the end of March. So 4 months.
We were 4 months without kids, and I will tell you, that was some of the darkest, saddest months of our lives, because initially they were like, you're gonna have kids before Christmas, you're gonna
the expectation we had been told was, you know, our open parameters, our desire for multiples was like, oh man, 2 weeks tops.
Yeah. I mean, we were really impressed actually going through PATH. Initially, we were only going to do one kid, maybe two. But then we were very, very impressed upon us that older siblings needed places to go, and that there was no place for these kids to go, and that they're really hard to place when there's older siblings. And so that's what we did. We're like, older siblings, let's do it. And they were like, oh, you're not going to wait at all. Like, every single PATH class are like, oh, you're never going to wait.
Yeah, this is not like wanting a blonde-haired, blue-eyed baby. Like, you're fast-tracked or whatever. And then
4 months later,
after month, and then Thanksgiving and Christmas. Christmas, when we had told everyone, the next time you see us, we're going to have kids.
Oh, yeah. That was
rough. Was horrible. It was so horrible.
And then everybody would sheepishly come up to us at Christmas parties or at family events, and they'd be like, where are your kids? Why don't you have kids? And I would have to cut the conversation off if they were asking it to Megan. I'd have to answer the question before Megan would, because she would break down.
Well, I lose all sense of tact, I think, and desire to not hurt people's feelings.
But it was interesting, and we waited 4 whole months, and it was sad and it was hard. And so we had waited so long, and we were not supposed to go out of town at any time.
Well, you're supposed to notify them because they'll pull you off the list.
Yeah. So if you go out of town, you're supposed to take your name off the list so they don't call you, because they, you know.
And you can get back in town and call them and say, I'm back in town. Give me a call.
Yeah. So we decided, you know what? We're not telling them we're going out of town. And we decided we're from St. Louis, so we're going to go to St. Louis for spring break and just chill out there for a week and stay at family's house and do different things. And sure enough, we're there for 24 hours and we get a phone.
No, 48. We were there for 2 days.
So we were there for 2 days. On the second day, we got the call.
Yeah.
So we will tell you all about that.
All about getting the call and what that looked like.
We might even say what happened to us 48 hours or 24 hours before getting the call as well.
Oh, Lord.
So it was a whole heap of mess and trouble.
That's a Sick Sad World podcast that goes on.
Yeah, so.
Corey, let me ask you this.
Oh, no. What?
What are you doing that makes you a good foster parent?
What is making me a good foster parent this episode? There's a band that I like, and they don't use words, but they make me feel things more than pretty much any other band. And that band is Explosions in the Sky. They are a Texas band out of Austin, and they are like a music nerd's like favorite band to see live. I got to see them live once, and
it was an explosion in your brain.
Yeah, it was an explosion in my brain. But they're famous. They don't have a vocalist. It's instrumental music. But they constantly, as their name kind of depicts, they are kind of like quiet, and then they do like fireworks of explosions of sound, and it's really engaging, and it takes you on this like emotional roller coaster. Well, when I saw it live like 4 years ago now with a friend, it was just like all of us just screaming and yelling and it getting so giddy over these like nerdy like tube amps that are getting hot and rattling and making natural distortion and going having overdrive, and we're just so geeked out on it, and it was so much fun. And so they have a new album that came out last week, and it is just so much fun. And it is, there's one song that they just have a sound. There's a sound on it, and I'll try to put it in here at some point. There's just this crazy sound that happens that it's the best sound in a song since Radiohead's Creep song. Like, there's that sound in Creep. If you've heard the song Creep by Radiohead, there's a gung-gung noise in it, and it just, that it's that noise that just grabs you from that moment. And this is the first song since that Radiohead Creep song that just, there's this noise in it that, and they use, then they expand that noise throughout the rest of the song, and it just gets me every time. So I am so excited about Explosions in the Sky, and just kind of like this meditative place that it takes me every time I listen to it. And Megan, what is making you a better foster parent?
I don't even think I have to answer because everyone's already tuned out, because that was so nerdy and so much.
So can I just, this segment is nerding.
Done, yeah.
This segment is nerding out with Corey. Last time it was
nobody's
Daredevil.
Nobody's left standing, I'll tell you that much. I'm almost done. Me, I would say I'm late to the game, maybe. I don't know. I can't tell if it's a new show or not, but we stumbled upon this renovation show on HGTV called Masters of Flip, I believe.
Ah, yes.
And I love it for a number of reasons. You know, if you've listened to this, that I have a degree in interior design, so it meets that need. But they're also a Nashville couple, and
The first episode, they flipped a home in our neighborhood.
The first episode we saw, I'm not sure if that was the first episode.
But one of the first episodes we saw, they flipped a home in the neighborhood we lived in.
Yeah.
Or live in, not lived
in. They had a running commentary on it, which I found interesting.
They're like, it's so hip and trendy, and this is where all the people want to live.
No,
and
stop.
That's not how we got to where we live.
Yeah.
So that is what's making, why is that making you a better foster parent?
Because it's so mindless and so wonderful. I don't have to think. So I can just chill out after our kids put in bed and watch that and just recharge and watch other people design stuff.
Let go for the day. Just let go and drift off.
It has nothing to do with the sounds they make. I'm visual. See, it's all visual. I want to see what they do with it. So yeah, that's my my making me better.
Awesome. That is great. Thank you once again for listening. This is the Radical Love Podcast. You can contact us at radicallovepodcast@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter @radicallovepod. This is the Radical Love Podcast, where we say radical love demands radical actions.